Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, November 21st, 2022. To begin with, as you just heard, this meeting is being recorded. As usual, we will place the meeting audio on our website, which is wmata.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips for people joining via phone calls. You can press *6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing *9. Everyone joining via video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you go under reactions, click on the raise hand icon that will raise and lower your virtual hands. That indicates that an individual is trying to speak and we can have one speaker at a time. So thank you in advance for that. Just a friendly reminder that we do have American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. Therefore, I would request everyone to please state your name first and then your comments. This helps the interpreters in doing their job well. It also helps everyone on the phone call knowing who the speaker is at that time. Madam Chair, with your permission, I can read the agenda out loud and then take the roll call of the committee members.
Yes, please do.
Thank you. I would also share my screen to display the meeting agenda for the convenience for the members who can see. And if you would bear with me for a quick moment, I can do that. And afterwards, I would start reading my agenda. I believe my screen is visible at this point. After I finish reading the agenda, we will go ahead and take the roll call of the committee members. Afterwards, today's meeting agenda will be reviewed and approved, as well as last month's meeting minutes. At 4:10, we will have customer service report and the commendations report. At 4:15, we will have Michael Wilson Award and the AAC Metro Access Safety Awards. At 4:10, we will have a discussion about open strollers on Metro buses, and we do have Mr. Leroy Jones with us. And perhaps we also have Kaya Doughton. At 4:45, we will have an update by Mr. Blake about Metro Access new vehicle procurement. At 4:55, Mr. Blake will also give us an update about Where Is My Ride response application pilot. At 5:05, there will be a discussion about Metro Access global positioning system pilot customer feedback. At 5:15, we will have an update about call center technology outages, followed by web booking issues. At 5:35, we will have public comment section, and the meeting is scheduled to be adjourned at 6 p.m. At this point, I will stop sharing my screen.
Full speed alert. Anu Sharma has...
Vanessa, I would go ahead and ask you, thank you so much. Madam Chair, I would go ahead and take the roll calls of all the AAC members at this point, and please confirm your presence. Azar Atura. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Alert. Audio now unmuted.
Present.
Thank you, Vanessa. Rico Dancy.
I'm here.
Thank you. Tawan Farmer.
Present.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher. Marcy Goldstein. Timothy Howard. Steve Kaffin. For the record, Steve Kaffin had informed us that he would be on travel. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Newsel.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Paul Samelford. Mr. Samelford had informed us that he would be joining the meeting a few minutes afterwards. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simonon. Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes the roster for today's meeting. As a reminder that we do allow 3 minutes for the public comments section, and we will go more in detail when we reach the public comments section. Madam Chair, at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Can I ask Madam Chair to bear with me for one moment? May I ask her permission to do that?
Yes.
Yes, Madam Chair, as I mentioned to you the other day, and I've called several members to alert them to the fact that while this is the Metro Access meeting, we did want to briefly and quickly touch on a fixed route item. And I was able to secure the attendance of our Executive Vice President of Metro Bus, Mr. Leroy Jones, to discuss a matter that has been raised previously, but I really wanted to get him here and discuss a fixed route issue very briefly, if you don't mind us amending the agenda to do that right now and get out of the way of the rest of the agenda.
Yes, we have already previously discussed it and approved. Well, I guess we don't have to vote. It's already done. We want to discuss this. So move forward, please.
I appreciate it. So Mr. Jones, Mr. Leroy Jones, can you go ahead and introduce yourself? Executive Vice President of Metro Bus. That means he's in charge of all the bus service of Metro. And discuss the policy that's of particular interest to members of the AAC, which is what happens, what is the requirement, or what is our commitment when there's a Metro bus approaching a customer in a mobility device, and there at the moment appears to be no space on the vehicle for that customer and the mobility device, as well as an announcement we'll be making soon about our stroller policy.
So Christian, thanks a lot for the intro. I would have to say, just for the record, that I'm the senior vice president, not the executive vice president. You gave me another promotion, so thank you for that. I appreciate that, but definitely wanted to clear that up for the record. One, I just wanted to say I appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee today to talk about some concerns. I definitely appreciate the committee raising the concerns, as Christian spoke about briefly just now. You know, one, before I go into the details of our policy and expectations of our bus operators, I will say that we take this issue very seriously. We have over the years and we'll continue to do so. I know sometimes we have bad experiences that do happen on our system. And, you know, in advance, I want to apologize for that, for anyone that may have had a bad experience. But I just want to make sure that you know, as the leader of bus, that I am really committed to making sure that we serve all folks with mobility devices and persons with disabilities, because it's really important to us. So having said that, I do have my colleague, Kaya Doughton, with me that can also answer any additional operational questions that may come up during the discussion, but I'll just get right into it. So as Christian mentioned, if for some reason a bus operator pulls up to a bus stop, and there's a person with a mobility device seeking bus service, and if it's an unfortunate situation where that space is occupied I'm gonna deal with this with two different ways. One, if someone is sitting in the seat, the operator is expected to make an announcement to the customer who may be sitting in that seat and politely ask them to relocate themselves to another area of the bus. If for some reason they don't relocate themselves, the expectation is for that bus operator to secure the bus, contact Bus Operations Communication Center, and get some direction from the control center. We don't expect the bus operator to tell the customer, hey, there's no space, and just drive off, right? We do expect the bus operator to do what I just said and take the direction from the Bus Operations Communication Center. And then also before, you know, if they get some direction to move forward, that bus operator should give that customer that is unable to be serviced a response as to why they aren't able to be serviced and things like that. If for some reason there is a mobility device on the bus already that's occupying that space, then, you know, it's expected to, one, the bus operator stop, notify the Bus Operators Communication Center to make sure that it goes on record that, hey, we have someone that does need service with a mobility device, and we work to try to make sure that the next bus coming down the line services that person. If for any reason any of the process that I just explained is not followed, and you know, we become aware of it, we conduct thorough investigations, and if it's determined that the process was not followed, we do hold the bus operators accountable. We have in the past and will continue to do so. It's my expectation that we do our very, very best and make every attempt to service all customers, especially those that are in mobility, that have mobility devices, and some of our vulnerable customers. So, Christian, with that being said, I did want to just take a pause right there before we start talking about strollers and just see if anyone had any thoughts or comments to what I just said.
This is Anu. Pat, go ahead.
Excuse me. This is Ms. Rush. And in the past, there have been a customer waiting in a wheelchair to get on the bus, and the bus is crowded and the seats are taken. And instead of doing any of what you said, they just drive on. They don't even stop and leave the person at the bus stop. So are you saying that they're going to stop and communicate with Operations Center and say, we are sending, a bus is coming in 5 minutes to pick you up, or they're going to stop and ask someone to please get out of the seat because we have a person that needs to board?
Yes, so thank you for that. So I would just say the first part of that question. Well, let me take the second part first. Yes, they are expected to stop the bus, you know, once they stop and try to service that stop. And if for some reason the seat is occupied, it's expected for them to make an announcement and politely ask those that are occupying the ADA seating to, you know, relocate themselves to another part of that bus. If for some reason that person does not, they are to call the Bus Operations Communication Center right away. They are not just to drive off.
That number posted?
I'm sorry?
May we get a thing of that number? And it needs to really be reported that day, not for you to recall. You should get the bus number and call right then. Is that correct?
The bus operator is to call right away.
I'm talking about the person who gets rolled by, because it's going to happen.
Yeah.
The bus driver is going to just keep, the bus is full. He's.
Yeah. So Ms. Rush, you're correct in the sense that the customer would call our customer care number, right, the regular customer care number, and report it as soon as possible. What Mr. Yeah. Jones is speaking about is what the driver is supposed to do. He or she is supposed to call our Bus Operations Control Center and inform them of the circumstance. That's the effort we want them to make, not just drive off. But yes,
but that's what I'm trying to say, that the customer has to be aggressive and not wait 3 months later right. when we're talking about it and say, well, I was on the bus. I don't know what day. No, you need to know the day, the bus number, and call immediately. I'm trying to get the customers in the right position.
Right. So our customer service hours have extended. So as Christian mentioned, that's the number that we need folks to call if for some reason we have that unfortunate mm-hmm. incident happen. And I agree with you, the sooner we get the call, the better. And if customer service gets that call, they immediately forward that information over to bus operations, and then we can start investigating that right away. I agree with you. It's not best for the organization or the customer that experience that or any other customer with a mobility device for that complaint to come in 3 months later. We want to try to address it as soon as possible because we don't want folks to have that experience at all. So the customer service number is public. So Christian, is it possible that we can get that, push that number out again? I know you all have done that in the past, but is it possible to push that number out again so folks have that information?
Yes, we will do that. Yes, sir.
Can you read that number out, Mr. Blank, for the recording?
Will do. Yes, I'm going to go ahead. I heard somebody speaking.
No. I was just going to type that in the message. But
yes, but also read it out, please, and type it
sure.
in.
Sure. So the customer relations phone number for fixed route is 202-637-1328.
Thank you, Anu. This is Pat. I was going to ask a question also.
Hello, Pat.
Thank you. Every customer is important, and this is something we want to make sure does not happen with the bus driving past the customer. Is this a widespread problem? Has it been an uptick in this or?
So I can't say it's been an uptick. I mean, have we had to deal with these situations in the past? We have. I don't have data readily available to say if it's an uptick, but just being transparent, we have had to deal with these situations, unfortunately, in the past and have had to investigate. Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Thanks. I agree. It's good to get it out there. And certainly, as Denise just said, being able to publicize what it is, and at least we will know from our side also what the expectations are, and have it, you know, publicized so that everybody knows what they should be doing. Thanks.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I will commit to, and I would ask Ms. Doughton to assist with this, we send out notice to operators to remind operators often on expectations such as this. And I will commit to making sure that we get another reminder out to the bus operator team within the next 7 days at the latest. It could be a lot sooner than that. But if you could give me to next Monday to get something out, because we have a review process, our documentation that we send out to the team we have to go through. But we'll work to try to expedite getting that reminder out. I think we just sent something out not too long ago, but we'll get something else out again.
Well, I see Phil has a question. And if we could close out after Phil, perhaps, and that would thank you. But let's hear from.
Yes, I'll be very quick and tell you that it's a very difficult situation and appreciate everything your drivers do. Some drivers are better than others. The situations that occur during rush hour are difficult.
Right.
Even if that disability seat is empty, there are so many people standing on the bus, you would have to ask people to leave the bus. And that's difficult.
Right.
The other thing, the drivers have to be aware of people with silent disabilities. They may not have a walker. They may not have a cane. But they may have a heart condition or a prosthetic leg or whatever. So it's very difficult. And my experience has been 90% of the time, the drivers have been great. They've taken a lot into consideration. And just encourage you to continue the policy and continue training the sensitivity of the drivers. To know the difference between being full during the middle of the day and full during the morning or evening rush hour. Thank you.
No, so Phil, thank you for those comments. And yes, it's really important for us to make sure that, you know, we service all customers to the extent possible, for sure. Do the bus operators have a tough job? They do. And I agree. I think, you know, the majority of our drivers do an outstanding job. So thank you for sharing your comments.
Excuse me, we have someone's computer talking in the background. Could they mute their device?
Consider it muted, Denise. I'm sorry.
This is Anu. Thank you.
So if possible, can we briefly talk a little bit about before we drop off? I did want to kind of turn it over to Kaya Doughton, who is one of our directors in bus transportation, and just talk a little bit about the stroller policy changes that we're going to publicize over the next few weeks. And definitely wanted to make sure that this committee was reminded again. I know there have been some ongoing discussions. And so without further ado, I would like to turn it over to Ms. Doughton. Kaya.
Thank you, Leroy. As Mr. Jones stated, my name is Kaya Doughton. I'm one of three service directors for bus transportation at WMATA. I too appreciate the opportunity to speak with the committee today. So the WMATA bus operator stroller policy has been in the pilot stage since March of 2020, in which all of our operators went through training on this policy. This policy allows open strollers in the priority seating of Metro buses only if space allows. And at this stage, as Mr. Jones stated, the pilot, it has been very successful, and WMATA is ready to formally communicate this policy to the public. So we're here today to, you know, gather any feedback or answer any questions for you all.
And just so the committee knows, we'll be discussing this more, but I appreciate Ms. Doughton's comments and contributions. I see Mr. I thought Tina was going to speak, but we're going to talk about this more moving forward. I just did not want, as y'all know, I don't want messaging or statements from Metro to come out before you hear about it. And I really wanted you to be able to hear from the senior vice president of bus about our commitment to adhering to the policy of the drivers and being aware that the open strollers will continue and you'll be hearing more about those. But I do appreciate the time of the Metro Access Subcommittee to indulge in this fixed route discussion. And if there aren't any more questions or concerns, well, I see one more hand. I see Philippa. So we'll close on after Philippa because we have a full agenda on paratransit. So Philippa, Ms. Mazzella.
Sure. Good evening, everyone. Did you say open strollers only if space allows?
Yes.
Okay. These buses are as tight. Well, I won't get gross, but you know, they're very tight. So I don't understand, when will there ever be space? You got like, what, 18 inches between seats, and the front is, it's just no space. So I don't know, only a space allows. I don't understand that.
So
just curious.
I'm sorry, were you finished? I apologize.
Yes, I'm through.
Yes, it was in the priority seating area, only if space allows. So the seating will be lifted so that the strollers can be placed on the bus.
Okay.
Strollers, open strollers are in the same location where a wheelchair would be secured. And what the policy is now is that if space is available, a parent, a mother, a father, or babysitter, whomever, can have the stroller open. But if a person in a mobility device is at the bus stop, it's the driver's duty, as we've been saying today, not to just say to the person at the bus stop, hey, there's no space to keep moving. It's their job to ask the person in the stroller to fold the wheelchair or anyone who's in that area, if there's somebody who's just sitting there, to ask if they would move. If they won't, which is their right, then the driver has other duties that he or she has to adhere to. But we've heard from some of your colleagues on this committee that that doesn't always occur. And that's the commitment that Mr. Jones and Ms. Doughton are here tonight to reaffirm, that they're going to be having their team members adhere to that policy.
So yes,
can I jump in for just a second and ask Ms. Allen and Mr. Jones if they would rack and present the same thing, because the open strollers, particularly whether they are occupied or unoccupied and who is occupying it, are important to regular riders. They block the entrance, they block the exit. It's not a question of getting through. And I think it's important that the Riders Advisory Council weigh on this as well as the AAC. It's a universal problem. There are people using those strollers as shopping carts. There are people using it to put 2 and 3 year olds that can easily stand, or 1 year olds that can easily sit on the lap of the parent. And so I think it's important that you talk to the Riders Advisory Council as well as to us. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Philippe still had something to say.
Well, let's come in from
Thank you. I'm just curious. So basically you're saying if you decide there's no room, the bus will roll right past the mother with the child standing in the rain in a stroller. But the other question is, this is public transportation. You're saying that they're using it for grocery carts. Maybe the person can't carry all those groceries. Like you said, there are hidden disabilities. Maybe a person can't carry it. Maybe they have bad shoulders, bad heart. Maybe you just need to reconfigure these buses to put some space on them, like, you know, we used to have.
At that point, the driver is supposed to realize that the person might say that they have a disability and they can't move. And the driver is supposed to notify the call center to make another bus available. Am I correct, sir?
That's the key. They're supposed to call the bus operations control center if the space for a mobility device is occupied and the customer can't or will not vacate the space. And that's our focus in terms of our jurisdiction, if you will. Bus configuration, we can definitely talk about that. People using it, we're not here to judge others and how they use the strollers. I'm not one to call it a problem, if you will. It's a challenge that we just have to face in terms of public transportation. But for us, our jurisdiction in this committee is with the fact that Mr. Jones and Ms. Doughton have committed to the policy that the AAC, quite frankly, helped us craft in terms of ensuring what the drivers are to do if the space is occupied by anyone, stroller or otherwise, recall.
Okay. So is this going to be on the agenda next week? That's my last question.
Remember, this policy has been in place for over 2 years now. So this is nothing new. This is really in response a lot to concerns I heard recently from Mr. Mangrum, a member of the committee, and some other points I've heard. So we wanted to, before any announcement furthering that, we wanted to bring some reassurances really to him and other members of this committee of the commitment of our senior vice president of bus. But if we want to talk about it further, we can, but this is an existing policy that has already been in place.
Yeah, so Christian, I would just also chime in and say, you know, if you need myself or anyone from the bus team to come back and participate with any questions or answers, you know, we're here for that. We're here to support that. I definitely appreciate all the feedback received thus far. As mentioned, you know, the strollers are used for various reasons, not just for toddlers, so as you said, before some disabilities are hidden. So, you know, I can't say whether the toddler has a disability or the parent has a disability, but at the end of the day, one of the things we want to try to do is to try to provide public transportation for all those that are in our community. So I appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee today.
Thank you. This is Ms. Rush. Thank you both for keeping us up to date with the policy and procedure, so we could have a better understanding. We might have some more questions in the future, and we will re-invite you, but we have to move along because this is Metro Access meeting, and we squeezed in the bus discussion. So understood. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, now we need to review the minutes. Well, we need to approve the agenda for today. So can I get a motion to approve the agenda for today?
So moved, Denise. So this is
second.
Pat.
Okay, can we vote on it? It's been moved and seconded. Those that approve?
Aye.
Any oppositions? Questions? It's been moved and approved, and we will move on to accept the minutes from the previous meeting. So can I get a nomination?
Move to approve.
I second that.
Okay, can we vote?
Aye.
That's three. I think there are nine people. Can we make sure that everyone approves?
Alert. Audio now unmuted.
Aye.
All right.
Windows.
Do we have any options? Okay, it's been moved, approved, and seconded, so it's been accepted. Next, we will have next on the agenda is the.
Madam Chair, this is Anu. Next, we have the customer service report as well as the commendations report.
May we proceed with those? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rush. Appreciate it. This is Allison Anderson. I'm with Metro Access. At this time, I'd like to present Ms. Kay Clark, project manager with our QA team, MTM, to give the public comment report from our last session. Kay?
Good afternoon, Ms. Anderson, and thank you. We actually do, in fact, have one comment to address in the previous meeting, and immediately after, I will provide the commendation from October for Metro Access. The comment that we have was as follows. An AAC member reported that she had a trip on October 13th where she called to rebook the trip for a later time. She stated that the window that was available was over an hour later than requested, and the operator still arrived 15 minutes late. The AAC member also reported that she had a trip on October 15th, and the operator informed her that she had another pickup and drop off to conduct. She stated the operator had to wait an extended period for the next customer's window to open before that trip could be performed. She mentioned the other customer was dropped off first, and then she was taken to her destination. The AAC member's concern was about the amount of time spent on board the vehicle. Mr. Blake said that for the trip on October 13th, the customer's request to adjust the pickup time was accommodated. However, the subsequent trip was late and investigation will take place to determine the reason for the service failure. He also stated on October 15th, he also stated the October 15th comment investigation will take place to determine if the customer was on board less than or equal to the FRE or fixed route equivalent. Upon investigation of the October 13th trip, findings conclude the operator arrived late after appearing to have difficulty finding the AAC member's location. And as far as the October 15th findings, We concluded the AAC membership was routed in a sound manner. However, the onboard time did actually exceed the FRE. Onboard time totaled 91 minutes, where the FRE or fixed route equivalent was actually 83 minutes. As far as for the commendations for Metro Access, a total of 350 were received in October. I'll break them down based on each provider. So for First Transit, we had 62. Transdev had 76. MB had 64. Challenger had 46. Next Transportation totaled 85. MTM received 3. Eligibility had 5. And then Abilities Ride had 9. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Ms. Clark, for that.
Excuse me, this is the interpreter. Yes. I just want to let them know we're going to switch interpreters.
Just let us know when you are ready for us to proceed. Okay, thank you.
We're ready. Thank you. Sorry about that.
All right, no problem. So at this time, we do not have anything to report insofar as specific outreach. However, as reports from customers come through the various offices here at WMATA, we do get those and fully investigate those reports and follow up with the customers insofar as their service concerns. So that concludes our report on public comment and outreach.
Thank you, Allison. This is Anu. Madam Chair, now it's time for the Michael Wilson Award as well as the AAC Safety Award.
All right, so I'm back up, Allison Anderson again. At this time, I'd like to present Mr. David Wilkins. I see him on screen with our award recipient, I believe. Mr. Wilkins is with Transdev, Director of Operations.
Good afternoon, all. Good afternoon. I have my operator here, Mr. Dennis Murphy. He's an excellent person. He asked me to read his bio for him. So Mr. Murphy, he says, I'm a professional vehicle operator. I started my wonderful journey with Metro Access on May 15, 2012. To be honest with you, I was just looking for a job, nothing so special. I just needed a job. This was the first application I submitted, the first place I went, and I was chosen. For many years, I drove 18-wheelers across country. I left that profession because I wanted to and needed to spend more time with my family. Things worked out favorably for me. I was introduced to a wonderful group of people here at Transdev. They showed me the ropes, they took me under their wing, and accepted me as their new family member. Even now, it still holds true. What I love about my job is I get the opportunity to provide quality coordinated transportation and community services that meets the needs of the people we are entrusted to serve. I'm truly blessed to be a part of such a caring group of people. I've also had the privilege of assisting in promoting independence and self-sufficiency for people with limited mobility by providing caring customer service. As I focus on safety, I'm very customer service oriented. I love people. At work, they call me the candy man. Daily, I issue candy and cookies to my subordinates and some of the management team. Life is great. A tad bit about Mr. Murphy. He was born in Philadelphia, PA. He says he spent a great portion of his time in North Carolina. He was raised by both his grandmother and aunt. At some point, he traveled to the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area where he settled down and made this his home. He's a happily married man of 3 years with 3 wonderful adult children. He says he enjoys bowling and card games, getting together with family and friends. Also traveling ranks high on his list whenever he gets a chance to do so. His favorite music to listen to is oldies but goodies. It takes him back to some fond memories which he holds near and dear in his heart. Social injustice is an area which has much relevance to him. For us here at Transdev, Mr. Murphy is a professional operator who operates with the highest integrity. He exhibits exceptional customer service. During his tenure with Transdev, he has received many commendations for his great acts. His demeanor is quite suited for this type of business. His appearance is always neat, presentable. He performs all of his duties with compassion and professionalism, empathy, sensitivity, and kindness. The main focus for Operator Murphy is that of safety. and monitoring his performance, safety always has been, as we expect always will be, at the forefront of everything that he does. It takes a certain kind of person to do a certain kind of job, such as transporting passengers that fall within the realm of ADA. Operator Murphy fits the bill for being an extremely safe and courteous team member. He is an awesome person. His infectious smile and his ability to always see the glasses half full is infectious. And he's truly a great representative, not only of Transdev, but about the value people that we serve. So it's with my distinct honor that we present to Mr. Murphy the Michael Wilson Safety Award. We thank you so much, sir, for everything you do. We are blessed to have
you. All right, thank you. All right.
Would you like to say anything? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're good. Thank you sometimes says it all. Amen.
All right.
All
thank
right.
you. Thank you
now unmuted.
So much. And Mr. Murphy, congratulations on being the double recipient of the Michael Wilson Recognition Award and the AAC Metro Access Safety Award. Job thank well you. Done. And that concludes our recognition for this afternoon.
Can I say something real quick, Allison, please?
Sure.
Mr. Murphy has been a great guy. I've been with the company for about 6 months now, and he's always in there. He's uprising. He creates the atmosphere for everybody that's in there who's, you know, they're a little down, whatever the case may be. But he pushes the driver's room to the best of their ability, drops candies on every table. I can't believe how he does it every day. But this is an awesome guy. He's an awesome person, and he loves to support what he does.
This is Ms. Rush. The Candyman has previously received the Rush Award from me, and I remember him receiving it at the JBG building. Am I correct, Candyman?
Oh, he had a prior engagement, so he had to leave, but as I understand it, that is correct.
Yes. He never runs out of candy and never runs out of politeness.
No, he does and, not. You are 100% right.
All right. Thank you.
This is Vanessa. I just wanted to comment too.
Alert.
Everything Cookie that was said your- about him is precise. I have been a recipient of him, and I haven't ran into him in a long time now, but he is the nicest guy. So I just wanted to say that as well.
All right, this is Anu. Thank you everyone for your comments and congratulations to Mr. Murphy. Madam Chair, our next topic for discussion is an update on Metro Access new vehicle procurement by Mr. Blake.
Mr. Blake?
Well, it'll be very brief because we don't have much of an update this month. We are adding a few more sedans. It'll be up to 50 more sedans being added to the fleet, but we don't have any update on the minivans yet. But as soon, and I'm anxious to get just one here, but as soon as we get the minivans or a minivan here, we will be testing them out. I've saw some new ones. They look beautiful. I believe you all are going to enjoy them, but I don't have them in our possession just yet. But as soon as we do, we'll provide you an update and send them around to members and other interested stakeholders to test it out. That's all I have to report on this matter.
This is Anu.
Thank you. Wait.
I apologize. Madam Chair, were you saying something?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Blake.
Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, the next topic is about an update on Where Is My Ride response application pilot, again, by Mr. Blake.
Mr. Blake?
Okay. Are you waiting on me?
Yes, Mr. Blake.
Sorry about that. I lost connection for a second. Please repeat the subject again.
Sure. So the next topic is about getting an update on where is my ride response application pilot.
Okay, well, that was actually going to be some feedback from two people in particular at this point, or others if they've received some text. But that was, we may want to hold off. If Chairperson Semaphore isn't on just yet, then we may want to hold off on that because it was going to be himself and perhaps Mr. Ansel Torres, a member of the public, who also I know received some of the text messages to give us some of their initial feedback. But if we want to push that down a little to give Paul time to get on the meeting, that would probably be better.
This is, again, Madam Chair, the next topic on the agenda is about Metro Access GPS pilot customer feedback. And Mr. Semaphore was going to add some comments to that.
Maybe I'm getting it mixed up. That's okay. So what's the, see, GPS is actually Ms. Williams Hall one, but what was the prior topic? What did you call the prior topic?
The Where Is My Ride app pilot.
Okay, that's Paul. That's the GPS an update can be provided by Ms. Williams Hall on the GPS.
Okay.
Yes.
Ms. Williams Hall.
Absolutely. Good evening, everyone. This is Terry Williams Hall, Director for Metro Access Service. And we have begun installing our Garmin devices into our vehicles that started late last week. We expect that all of the vehicles will be completely outfitted by the end of the calendar year. So you should begin to notice some changes within the next week or so with regard to the use of those devices and the drivers getting more accurate real-time traffic information. I'd be happy to take any questions.
This is Anu. If any of the committee members have any questions, you can raise your virtual hands and come off of mute. Okay, Pat Sheehan, go ahead.
Let me see if I'm unmuted. Good. Thank you, Anu. I wasn't sure if I'd gotten unmuted. Is there going to be additional information on GPS?
Like what, Mr. Sheehan? What other information are you interested in?
Well, I thought the report was going to be an update on GPS with respect to the Garmin system. What kind of information are we going to be getting in addition to where the vehicle is, perhaps? Real-time information? That sort of thing.
Okay.
Those are two different subjects. GPS is the device that's going to
I'm sorry. Okay. You're right. Yeah. I got you, Mr. Blake. Yes. When I'm thinking GPS, I'm also thinking real-time information. Where's my ride?
Correct. So to try to distinguish the two, yes, we're calling GPS the device that's in the vehicles. That's our Garmin device. And where's my ride to kind of correlate with our long time, where's my ride phone number is our real time information effort that's underway to try to develop a browser based app that eventually will provide Uber like, for lack of better term, information to our customers.
Okay. And I don't know if it's really fair to ask that second part of that question, but that's what I was asking.
Right. And that's what I was saying. Let's hold off for a second because right now we literally just began testing and we have two individuals that I know have received some of the text messages. And that's Paul. And I believe Paul wants to weigh in heavily on that, as well as Ansel Torres. So when Paul arrives, that's when we're going to bring that topic up and give any next steps on that.
Very good, sir.
Yes, sir.
This is Anu. I see Darnese Bush has raised her hand up. Darnese, do you have a question or comment? You can come off of mute.
My comment is I was confused My question will wait with Paul for the ride on information, the real time information, because I received that and that's what my comment concerns.
Okay, yeah, let's give him a few minutes. And if he doesn't arrive, then we'll come to you and begin the dialogue. But do we have another agenda item?
Yes, Mr. Blake, this is Anu again. So the next topic we can switch to is the call center technology outages update. And I believe that topic was placed by Mr. Semaphore due to a weekend issue or?
Yes, and I could start, but actually if Ms. Williams-Hall, would you like to begin that dialogue or do you want me to go ahead?
I'm just not sure what the issue is or what the question is.
The Saturday, the weekend outage when there was the transfer of the server and there were challenges in the call center.
Okay. So as Mr. Blake just shared, this is Terry and Williams Hall, Director for Metro Access. But as Mr. Blake just shared, a few weeks ago, now almost a month, the data center at the former headquarters for WMATA, the Jackson Graham building, overheated. This happened on a Thursday to begin with. It overheated, and when it did, there had to be a transfer of all of the service to the backup data center, which is at the Carmen Turner building. That process, on the first day that it occurred, that process shut down service, incoming call service for us for 3.5 hours while they did the transfer. Thereafter, there were problems when it was time to sustain the transfer of service and in efforts to get it back over to JGB. And so that likely is the weekend event that we are referencing now. Things are now stable. They've not transferred all of the services back to JGB. There is some question as to whether or not that will be done. But right now, everything is stable on the backup service at Carmen Turner facility. And so when those things happen, typically what we're able to do is to transfer to our business continuity system. But this outage was so severe, we were unable to even utilize that system for those 3 hours, which is why there was limited access to the call center, extremely limited. No calls could come in whatsoever. But I'd be happy to take any questions with regard to that.
And so based on my private conversations with Paul, I know one of his concerns is, and we have a plan, we have a continuity plan, but it seemed like for a few hours, and yes, I was in the middle of it, we were kind of on Gilligan's Island as it comes to communication, and that's not good for our customers. So have we learned anything from this experience, and what can we do the next time there's an outage that our continuity plan has been updated, if you will, so that we will not have that total silent treatment, if you will.
If I recall correctly, Mr. Blake, and please keep me accurate here, I think it was that reservations could not take any calls, but the dispatch, Where's My Ride, was still available, although they did not have any access to the system information. So reservations could not take reservations for those 3 hours. We were able to get on the business continuity phone system. So I want to correct that. But we did not have access to any information because the trapeze system was unavailable.
Gotcha. And for the situation with the reservations, we did, I think, 2 days in a row provide same day service.
Yes.
To try to mitigate any impact. And as Paul recommended, and we were already underway, but as Paul recommended, we placed a lot of messaging on the IVR. I took a lot of calls. You know, a lot of customers have my number. They called me, and I was also reassuring those customers who called me that you can book trips the same day. And so we did carry on same day service for a couple of days in an effort to make sure everyone can get the trip that they needed. And those are some of the things we were sharing with Paul, but I know he wanted to have a open discussion with the public and the committee about that day that impacted many customers. And for that, we apologize. It was certainly not of our doing. It wasn't a planned movement by us. It was just an outage. But our continuity plan, as Ms. Williams-Hall corrected me, did work to an extent. And we want to be 100%, not 95%, unfortunately. So if Paul has other questions or if there's any.
I'm here. Hello, everyone. I am back. Sorry, I had two doctor's appointments. I will say for that subject, it took a good bit of time in the evening because it did affect road service because everything went out with the window with late trips well beyond 30 minutes because I was riding that evening. I know for a time period of getting into the call center to where's my ride that evening that happened, I believe November 1st, it at first took 20 minutes, but at the end of the evening, I was calling back about late trips and requesting an Uber. It went back to almost normal within a few minutes. I was able to call into the call center. But it seemed around that, what was it 5 p.m. to almost 8 p.m.? It was a very challenging time.
I will add, this is Ms. Williams-Hall again, that we also did an outbound robocall to notify customers that same day SIP service was available the following day.
Oh, yes, I received it because when I guess he was doing a quality assurance check, I said that was not there. So it needs to happen for customers because they don't have no clue what's going on
right,
and how to respond.
Absolutely. Again, it was totally out of our control. Unfortunately, all of our backup systems worked. What was unavailable was the scheduling and day of service system trapeze. That's where we lost that. And we would not be able to do anything with regard to that because it's not a cloud-based system. In the future, if we ever get an opportunity to solicit for a new scheduling and dispatch system, one of our primary requirements is that it is not an on-prem server, but it is a cloud-based application.
Oh, so that way you can access information anywhere and kind of recover in a situation like that, hopefully fairly rapidly.
Yes, you'd be able to go around the need for access in a server. As long as you can get internet connectivity, then you can get to the cloud-based applications.
All right. Denise, so where are we at in the agenda right now?
Oh, can I add one additional thing? I'm sorry.
Sure.
I'm sorry. This is Ms. Williams. So I just want to clarify something. I add one other piece of very important information Mr. Blake and I neglected to share. The very next day, we opened up reservations 2 hours early, and we notified customers of that through the outbound robocall that they could start making their reservations at 6 a.m. the next day for same-day service.
And I will say I called at 6 a.m., It was true. At least y'all put in the messaging. It might take a minute. It took me about 25 minutes. Now, just for one trip, it was, you know, I guess they were dealing with technical issues. They told me to call back, but I told Mr. Blake and I did get a call back and we finally got the technical issue fixed.
Yes. Everything we could do to get the customer's same day service and all of the trips addressed, we did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it ultimately did happen. It just had little road bumps, but that was fixed fairly quickly.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead, Denise.
To update you, we are waiting for your comments and the subjects that you wanted to discuss. That's where we are about the a new service, I guess, that you and Mr. Torres experienced?
So if we're going to, the pilot that we're doing with, when the vehicle arrives, I will say this, Mr. Blake, the information that we're getting is not exactly the same information that you showed us at the last meeting. So let me clarify that. So, anywhere from, I guess, half hour, 40 minutes, or even in the middle of the window, I will get randomly, this Metro Access vehicle will pick you up. half the time it's accurate in saying your vehicle will be here in X amount of minutes and it shows it on the map. There's been times when vehicle didn't show up until after the window. What would be helpful for us, all of us customers with this, is the information is dynamic, where you only can, when you get the information about where the vehicle is and you go 20 minutes later to see where it's at, it's still at that same place in one point in time. What we would like to request to have as part of this app is, would be helpful in, to us, is, you know, knowing what the exact vehicle location is in this pilot versus that one point in time, because that's not, it's useless to us when it's 20 minutes later and it predicted the vehicle would have been here in 10 minutes and it's not there. And there's no way for me to find out further information of the vehicle location or updated, you know, how many minutes it would be showing up like it showed on your side, as to the information we possibly should be receiving. Does that make sense to you, Mr. Blake?
It makes total sense, yes. And remember, we're still at the very, very early stages, because you're right. What I was really hoping that we would be at this point is we send you a link, you click on it at one time, and then you click on that same link, you know, 10 minutes later. Yeah. That's coming. We're not there yet.
My expectation was when you click on that link similar to Uber, reference that, it will be similar to Uber where I get an update and see where the vehicle's at when I'm sent the link for the Uber trip and I say to go, and then I'm able to see minute by minute, you know, where the vehicle is at until it arrives to me.
And that's coming. And so I though was under the impression, because I do have the ability to click on the Paul Semaphore trip right now, see where it's at. Oh, 10 minutes later, let me go back and check on Paul, make sure he's being picked up. And I have that update. We have to send you another link to give you the update. That's a next step in this process. So one of the things you did say, which is the key at this moment, and then we're going to go to Mr. Torres, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah, because he wants to get feedback too, I'm sure.
The thing we needed from you and Mr. Torres, in addition to Mr. Torres providing us feedback initially on visual disability aspects of it, was accuracy. And you did say in some cases or a lot of cases it was accurate, but not in all cases. And that's what I'm expecting, but that's kind of where we are right this minute. How accurate? Because if you recall the first time we tried something, you were getting calls 3 a.m. for a 10 a.m. pickup.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
We wanted to make sure that was eliminated first, mm-hmm. that the system is not doing that. And then the system is actually sending you information about a trip. If it says it's 10 minutes away, other than being late because of traffic, accident, or something else, that it's relatively accurate in that sense. And you've said in some cases it is.
So here's my further prodding question. So once, you know, it gives me the information, could the information change if they added a trip onto the driver and that's the reason why it's late? That's why, you know, it's more urgent. If that happens, I know that that's the nature of the business, that we were able to, you know, at least have an updated link to see, yeah, okay, we know this, and add on a trip or whatever, or the driver has to make another stop before me. And that will be helpful in learning that. The other piece is one predictability, you know, it does do, well, I don't know, it's fortunate for you. It's like, oh, you gave me this trip and telling me it's 51 minutes away and I see where it's at and have a pretty good guess. It's Friday, horrible traffic. Why'd you just send an Uber? Because you know it's going to be late, because I'm going to call at the end of the window and get it anyway. So there are trips like that.
Okay. But to keep everything fair, and I hear you, and that's a great, great point. But to keep everything fair, we have established a policy that your trip cannot be moved to Uber until it's either projected late by the system or is actually late. Now, we don't want you to have to wait till it's late, But
and I'm just saying, like, when you get a trip that comes in through this application right now, let's say 5 or 10 minutes into the window, and it says 51 minutes late, and it's clear that it's going to be way late.
Well, in that case, then yes, the dispatch team, the Where's My Ride team certainly can, because they'll have this information as well, using logic to say this is going to be a late trip. We can move it if the customer.
I mean, when I call at the end of the window, yes, they certainly move it. But I'm like, yeah, I'm just waiting around until 29 minutes, then call. And yep, I can request an Uber because you already told me this. But, you know, it's going to be extremely late. So, and that's just what feels.
You shouldn't have to think that way, because our contractor should be able to discern the same information you're discerning if they're looking at the same information. So I agree with you on that. That's a good use of the tool for now. But of course, we're trying to build this into something much, much greater. And so we appreciate your patience and the continued feedback. If we can hear from Mr. Torres and Ms. Coles, so yep. I can take some more notes. But we're going to continue to build this, build the product out.
So Mr. Torres, you go ahead first, followed by Ms. Coles, each of y'all 3 minutes.
Yeah, so I just want to confirm some of the same issues that you're having, Paul.
Yes.
There are times when it is accurate, and there are times when it's way, way off, like by a whole 36 minutes or so one time. I use GPS, so I know that when you estimate a trip with GPS, that sometimes it is not going to be to the minute accurate. 5 minutes, 10 minutes usually. 15 minutes, very seldom, but 36 minutes never happened. So that was my very last experience with it. And a question that I have, Mr. Blake, about it is, what is the mechanism or system that is in place to determine when this notification is actually sent? Is there an event that occurs that triggers this message? That's one question that I have. And then a technical issue that I had with the app was that using VoiceOver, which is what I use on the iPhone, to access the link, it just wasn't working. It was not allowing me to link to the page where the information was located. That was a problem that I was having with the Uber emails, text messages earlier. That was somehow solved, but the problem continues to exist with this new system. If I turn off VoiceOver, it can link, but when VoiceOver is on, it's not. So there's something going on there.
So we're gonna check on that, but help me out if you can. I mean, if you don't remember, it's okay. Do you remember what it is we did? Because I'm just being honest, I can't remember that detailed at the moment. Do you remember what we may have done to address this? Because I remember the concern, but what did we do to address the issue with the Uber links, if you recall at all?
Well, I was not privy to what was done. All I know is that one day I was having the problem. For a period of time I was having the problem, and it just went away. Now, there's some things, occasionally it still happens, and what I would do with that is to close the browser, and even sometimes the text messaging app, and just reopen everything, and then it would work. Initially, I stopped using Safari for it, and I used Google Chrome as my default browser, so that it would automatically launch into that. And that seemed to take care of the problem. Those are some of the things that I tried. I'm not sure what was done system-wide, if anything was done at all, but it works now more times than it doesn't. And even when it doesn't, all I have to do is to use one of those techniques, and it links just fine.
Okay, I'm going to follow up on it, but I guess Ms. Williams-Hall, I'll just say if it was not working for him one day or for months, and then all of a sudden it turned, it just shows that my prayers do get answered every once in a while.
But Mr. Blake, what can you ask, answer that question for me? The question I had about what triggers the message being sent? I'm very curious about that.
Here's what's going on and why we're trying to work it out. What triggers it is the minute a vehicle is apparently in destination, in a route to come and pick the customer up. So that could mean the vehicle is in Chantilly and going to Upper Marlboro. So it'll tell you an hour and a half. Well, obviously we don't want that. We're trying to get to a point where you don't get the text message until it's literally an imminent arrival. And right now it's programmed as imminent arrival when a vehicle is on its way to get to you. But as Paul pointed out, there could be a trip insert. There could be other things. It could be a vehicle could be changed. So we've got to move away from this elongated imminent arrival to something with a much smaller window, i.e. 30 minutes max, 10 minutes preferably. But we're working on that. So right now, at least we know that the vehicle is sharing the information with us, and we can then share that information with you, the customer. But now we need the vehicle to think a little more and tell and let us know. We don't need to know that you're an hour away from Mr. Torres. We need you to let Mr. Torres know when you're 15 or 10 minutes away. So that's kind of the next step we have to work out.
Okay.
Yes.
One quick thing. Just
go ahead.
I had a question. I had put up my hand, but I had a question to Ms. Williams-Hall about the system, because one of the things that was happening here when I tried using the reservation on the web, it wasn't working at all. I don't know if it's back up now, but
I'll speak to that later.
For a while, okay. All right. Very good.
I have some issues to bring up about that.
All right.
As a heavy user like you, almost dependent user. Ms. Coles, you're next.
Alert. Audio now unmuted.
Yes, this is Vanessa. I had two comments I wanted to make regarding Uberlink. I noticed that for one trip, we get 2-3 text messages, and I end up getting swamped with a lot of text messages, which is useful. But it has an option to turn off the notification. What would be the ramification if I did that? And then my second concern is one day I got 3 different cancellations. They automatically, you know, sent another vehicle. But can you explain what's going on when that happens?
Yes, 2 very good questions. If you turn off notifications, I will not be able to book trips for you. And in fact, even the call center would be unable to book
search box edit
flex trips for you. They would be able to book a trip by pickup time, but you would not be able to book flex trips because Uber only sends flex trips to numbers that accept text messages. So we don't want to do that. I have a whole list of customers who signed up for Uber, and I can't send them trips, and then they'll call me and I'll go back and look and say, you have to, I forgot the exact steps, but there's a message you have to send back to Uber to say I'm back in. So you don't want to do that. And now let me just, you know, I make this reminder periodically because, you know, I take test trips on Uber so I could try to experience what you all as the customers are experiencing so I could be able to help in situations and talk about it. You're right. Every trip, you're getting 3 text messages. You're getting 3 text messages, though, is because we made a commitment that we're not going to be dependent on an app that is good and it's accessible. I'm not talking about anything about their app, but we wanted a text-based system to ensure accessibility to everybody. Low vision, no vision, intellectual, who may not necessarily get the mapping and all that kind of stuff. And when you try to take all the information that is visual and drill it down into words, well, it does take quite a bit of text. And that's why there are three messages for each trip. And what you want to do, I mean, I'm not encouraging. One of the messages still talks a lot about mask and the rules of the trip. If you scroll down, you know, a couple of your messages, it's usually the third one, I believe, that has the actual trip. But I'm not saying ignore the others. It's like we all, when we get on a plane and I was just on a flight the other day and are you listening to the flight attendants tell you about all the safety equipment? Well, we should, but we know that a lot of us kind of go past it. I'm not recommending that, but I'm just letting you know that from my experience, it appears that it's usually the third text that has actual trip link in it.
Oh, and the other thing is, in addition to that, I'm getting a telephone call too that is telling about the trip.
Now that to me, yes, that is a little annoying. And now those I do ignore, I'll admit, whenever I take one of these test trips. But again, that's a backup for the customer. And again, we want to be accessible and we want customers to be informed. Maybe you don't look at your text messages. There's a whole lot of that. We're trying to address as many customers and their particular needs as possible. And the phone call is just a reminder to the customer, just in case they need it. But the phone call I find is not as valuable to me, but I don't want my experience to be the customer's experience, because generally the call comes right after you click the link.
Yeah, it does.
So why do you need to have that phone call? I would rather have the phone call, as we were just talking about with the Where's My Ride app. I'd rather have the phone call when the driver is a little closer to me.
Now, the phone call, I think, is useful only because if Uber, like in some cases, may have to change drivers, and there are been a few situations where it's changed from 1 to 2 to 3. That way, for someone who needs the phone access, it's very helpful that they get the most updated information about their vehicle.
That's a good point, but oftentimes, though, again, if there were a phone call about a switch trip, I think I would appreciate that more personally. But again, this phone call, I believe Ms. Coles is talking about, is right after we click the link, we get a call immediately saying, hey, your trip is on its way. And we know that because we just clicked the link asking for it. But I'm not going to take it away, but we'll see if we can find a way to make that a little more useful to you as the customer as well. And then one last point, Ms. Coles raised, and you just alluded to it as well, Paul. Uber drivers, keep in mind, the Uber trips you all are taking are the exact same trips that I take on my app. My mother just landed in Fort Lauderdale last night. I sent her an Uber to the airport. They're not doing any Metro Access service or something else. So those drivers are independent contractors. They see the amount that they're going to get paid for this particular trip. And let's face it, some of them don't want it. Now, that happens if they get to a point where Uber says there are no drivers available. I, as well as members of the call center, get an email. And what we just simply do is rebook the trip. It'll be a higher cost, and that'll attract the driver to come and pick you up. So with Uber, even if they're being sent by Metro Access, you're at the whim of the market, just like myself or my mom or anybody else would be, in terms of the drivers have some form of control over what price they're willing to work for.
Mm-hmm. All right. I can throw in one more situation. On occasion, when I've had to ask the dispatchers to help with my Uber link, Is that dispatcher authorized to initiate it, or should we be asking for the supervisor? Because I've wasted 10 minutes with the reservation, with the dispatcher, either
So what I have seen in the call center, and I think it's beginning to be more efficient now, at least in my opinion, is normally if I get someone and they see, yes, this needs to go to a supervisor, they will, but that's more of an employee who's not there because some are remote, so they have to transfer it, or and depending who's there, and then there's been cases where I did not need to do that because I guess there's certain staff that's trained frontline when they see certain pieces of information that, yeah, this needs to be, they begin to initiate the process and start asking you the questions and put you on hold until you get the information. Is that correct, Mr. Blake?
That's correct. But to the broader point, the frontline dispatchers don't all have access to book trips on Uber. Some of the supervisors do. So if you know your trip is related specifically to an Uber link, if you can, I mean, I don't know all the exact protocols and I'm not trying to change the contracting protocol, but you may want to, the minute you speak to a person, you may want to go ahead and just state that this is in regard to an Uber link. Can I have a supervisor?
Yeah.
Transfer you right away, some may not. Right. And also while you're on hold, because there may be a hold, I encourage people, and I've had my team members now, as we're calling customers back if they ever have complaints, text, not necessarily call, text my number at the same time. I'm not going to answer every text or every response because I'm not available 24/7. But a lot of times what has been happening is you text me, I see it, I have Uber, you big. Sometimes my ability to just click the link and send another trip is faster than getting through to the supervisor. So we're doing a double step until we, again, as Paul mentioned, continue to be a little more efficient in the call center with handling the Uber trips.
And I've noticed that over time, and it helps really during the rush, you know, I guess the congested periods, you know, in the morning and evening when, you know, there's other trained staff that can begin to initiate and people don't have to wait 30 minutes past the window just to get a Uber trip.
Correct.
So
if I can slide one more.
Well, I need to find out what's for this agenda, what hasn't been covered yet. Denise, so did we cover, as I look at the agenda, about the vehicle procurement yet?
We've covered everything else. I was just mentioning.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. You did well. Thank you, Denise. Okay, so I want to I'll allow you one question. Then I want to talk about web booking issues, in which I know Mr. Torres will chime in. I'll start off because obviously, and I want to get his feedback as it relates to this. Ms. Coles, go ahead with your one more question. Then I need to get to that issue.
Well, I just wanted to say on occasions, for instance, if we do not take the Uber trip for that day, we still need to call and cancel the Metro Access side of the trip. Or if we don't use Uber, it just goes away if you don't use it.
That is correct. If your trip has been assigned to Uber and you decide not to use it, please do not call the call center. You don't have to call the call center. If your trip is on Metro Access and you decide you don't want your trip, you must call the call center to cancel your trip. Otherwise, you would be counted as a no-show. But there is no no-show on Uber trips. If you decide not to use the Uber link, don't click it. Don't call the call center.
All right. Thank you so much. So next we're going to go with web booking issues. So I wish I was able to tell management early, but I got busy this weekend. So the things that I have seen, so a week before booking trips online for the for trips like to Loudoun County, of course, I went to book a trip the first day online, and I was trying to do it at least less than a week before to Ashburn Station. That did not go through online because it keeps giving me the message, this trip cannot be booked. So I had to go through calling in on reservations and the same trip booked because, you know, I looked on Google Maps. I said, you know, this destination is within 3/4 of a mile. It's right at the station. It was a restaurant, but they were able to successfully book the trip. So that's one issue. But what I've seen now is maybe it took some time, a couple of days after, but like this weekend when I was booking trips, I was able to book some trips into Loudoun County independently without having to get that error message or the need to call reservations. So maybe it's just, it was timing, or maybe the days before I couldn't do it, but this weekend I was able to do it. The other main issue with the web booking that I'm seeing, I think Mr. Torres might be alluding to, is particularly during heavy times of use, it is extremely slow to book a reservation online. Like it's taking almost like 5 to maybe 6 or 7 minutes just to book one trip. And like I said, on weekends, late nights, it's normal, fine booking, not an issue. But during like, I want to say early in the morning, like 8, 9, 10 a.m. and especially before that 4:30 period up until 6, 7 o'clock at night, it's almost a painful chore because sometimes what may happen is the trip books partially, and I have to look at back up my list when I refresh to go back to the main menu to see if my trip was booked. If I don't see it, I say, oh, this is a partially booked trip because it gave me a time. Then I have to go try to rebook it again and then see that this partially booked trip is there and take it out, where normally I would have had to call reservations. But luckily now in this online system, I'm able to see it, take it out, and then reschedule the trip. So processes like that are going on. Then there's the issue, especially, and I think possibly my suspicion is it's using the same resources online as reservations during those heavily used times. And I want to quantify that from probably whenever reservations is open until it's closed, until maybe an hour or two after. There have been intermittent periods where the web booking becomes unavailable and it gives me that Metro maintenance page, and then it comes back up. And especially during that time period, it's been getting, at least in my opinion, worse and worse. But outside of those heavily used times where customers are probably on booking trips and reservations, it's used booking trips to other customers, it's been fine. But it's kind of annoying, you know, because you want to be able to use it 24 hours a day, even during, you know, time, you know, during the day. But it's like I have to wait until late at night or on a weekend to do it normally, where, oh, I may have to change something at the last minute and cancel this and rebook it. But it's, you know, I have to plan enough time well before 4:30 to book it online, or I may not get it because all these other error and issues are happening. Does that make sense to you, Mr. Blake or Ms. Anderson? Or do you have any follow-up questions?
No, we hear the ring.
And I don't know if there's a way to fix that, or is that going to be an ongoing thing? Oh, if someone can mute themselves, Dobby, please. Oh, Dobby, if you can mute, because we can hear your background. Anu, is there any way you mute, Dobby? All right. So did you have any follow-up questions, Mr. Blake
or Ms. Anderson? You've given us some key information, but Ms. Anderson, do you have any feedback or Ms. Williams-Hall on any web booking challenges we face lately?
Right. I would share with you, Mr. Semaphore, that I'm not certain that it's a stress on the system, because the system that you'd be talking about would be Trapeze.
Yes.
And it does not have a number of user limitation, or it doesn't slow down when there are X number of users. So I'm more interested in finding out what else could be going on. It could be an issue with the actual website. I'm not sure. But give us an opportunity to look into that over the next couple of days, and we'll circle back with an update.
Yeah, because this intermittent like outage where I see that sign and then it works again, mm-hmm. And then the slowness of it. And then the fact that there was one time I did a reservation from Union Station in the late hours of night, and reservation, and this was about a week and a half ago, they had to get IT. It took 30 minutes just to make that trip because they were having technical issues just trying to book that trip because the 30 minute window didn't come out properly. Even though that she heard me loud and clear and did everything right, she had to get IT, and I was sitting on the phone for 30 minutes just to get one trip processed.
Right. But when you say IT, do you know if it was a trapeze issue or something else?
All I know, she told me for that, you probably can look up and hear the conversation because I only call so rarely. She said there was an issue with IT. It was a technical, and they have IT working on it and had me on the phone until the trip was properly booked.
We'll look into that and follow up.
But that's what and then seeing these issues made me possibly think there might be some kind of technical issue going on, because it seems to happen the slowest during those waking hours in which, you know, everyone's possibly on the system. On weekends, overnight, late at night, it's not an issue. I can book in a few minutes, but during those time periods, it's painfully slow. And then this dropping of the, you know, the maintenance page is there and don't have access to it. And then it's back up randomly. And it seems to be happening during that time period.
No, I completely understand. I just want to take a look at it before we, you know.
I don't want it to be taken out because it's great.
No, but I got booking, it. But no, just want to make sure that we know what the issue is. So before I say it's trapeze, I'd like to do some research. So we'll just circle back. We'll do some research, find out what the problem is, hopefully address it so that you don't have to experience it, but then report to you what our findings were.
Mr. Torres, is there something similar to that you experienced if I'm talking about?
Yes. Basically, it was not coming up at all several times, and we had to call, you know, the line and do the reservation that way. That's been an issue, and also the slow processing of the request once it is made. It seems to be getting longer and longer. Not sure why that is. And then another thing that is happening, and maybe this is the way the system is programmed, but what's happening is that, let's say I tell the system that I want to be picked up at 1 o'clock. It gives me a pickup time that I don't like, maybe 11:45 or something like that. And then I say, all right, go again 30 minutes later. And then it comes back and it gives me the same time. And then I say 2 o'clock, and then it gives me 3 o'clock. And but interestingly, if I were to call a live agent to make the reservation, they don't seem to be falling into that pit. So I don't know if there is, you know, there's more flexibility when you call the agents. Is it, I mean, I'm assuming it's everybody's using trapeze. I'm not sure what might be the explanation for that.
So you heard Ms. Williams Hall, two people who are experiencing this slowness. So it's not just me, it's Mr. Torres also, and some of his other issues. Did you have any further questions for him?
No, I completely understand. I think we've captured that, and we'll look into that as well and provide an update to both of you individually and then in the next meeting if you'd like.
Oh, sure. All right, thank you on that. Now, Mr. Blake, I had a question for you. So this Where's My Ride response application pilot, I missed that. Is that the same thing we were just talking about in terms of being able to, you know, see where the trip is with the text?
Yes, sir. That's
the... Oh, okay. Okay, good. Okay. I just wanted to make sure. All right, so I guess now we're going down to, did we do the Metro Access GPS pilot? Oh, we already did. That was the same thing. We already talked about the outages. So I guess now we're up to customer comment, if I'm correct, Ms. Rush and our Anu.
Chair Samerford, this is Anu. Yes, it is time for public comments.
Did you have anyone from public comment request during, before? Or...
We just got two hands raised up by Ansel Torres and Darnese Bush.
Okay. I'm going to do Darnese Bush first, 3 minutes, and then same thing with Mr. Torres.
Okay, I will start the timer when they start speaking.
Hey, this is Darnese. Hi, everybody. One of the comments I had was about the new system, I guess you call it Ride On, where they text the information. I've been having good response with that. They haven't texted me 3 times. They text me 1 time about the trip, and then they follow it up with a call. So that's usually what I'm getting. And so far, they've been pretty much on time. They'll say 21 minutes, we'll be in 21 minutes, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, that type of thing. So I'm not having any problems with that. I do have a problem with, I'm trying to change in the remark column on my Metro Access. It's still showing my old address, stop at 2618. And the drivers are getting confused. And I've tried to get that taken off with eligibility, and eligibility said that it can't, they don't see it. But all of the drivers that come see that remark in the remarks, unless I remember every trip that I book to ask them to take that off.
So it sounds like, well, you know, we're gonna check with eligibility as well on this. But is it a pickup or drop off comment in a subscription trip?
Yeah, it's the old subscription trip I had at the previous address. It's been on there now for an additional 3 years.
Okay, so we'll ask Ms. Anderson and Mr. Colbert, a combination of the two. Let's find the message we're talking about, and then we'll go from there.
Did you
take a trip today by any chance? I'm gonna look right now. Did you take a trip today?
Yes.
Okay, so I'll look and see what they're talking about.
All right, so okay. So next will be Mr. Torres for 3 minutes, and then followed by Pat Sheehan, because I see his hand raised.
Okay, a couple things here. I am concerned about the state of the online copy of the bylaws. I made a very heroic effort to get it put back on the website, and it was done, and that was greatly appreciated. Unfortunately, it is not thoroughly accessible. It is quite a struggle to read it using the typical screen reader navigation tools that makes it relatively easy to read documents of that type. The headings are not navigating correctly, and this is a common way that people who use screen readers operate. Also, there are more typos than should be in a document like that. So it has, in my perception, a sloppy appearance. And it also is harder to read as a result. You should be able to go from Article 1 to Article 2 to Article 3. Anybody who is a screen reader user that would try to do that would get some, it would start off working okay, but it would turn into gibberish. Like Article 5, I think, it's just Article and 5, and the Roman numeral for 5. And it's reading it as one word. So unless you're really paying close attention, you're like, what is this? This is not Article 5. What is that? Anyway, so that's one issue. The other issue that I have has to do, and this is something that I brought up at the last meeting, has to do with the positive budget variance from the Metro Access ACCS operations. I think a thorough discussion and a thorough reveal needs to be done on what is going on with the money that it is that is budgeted for Metro Access, is not spent. And Mr. Blake explained that that money then gets transferred into use by other parts of Metro. I do not think that is appropriate, because if you have needs that are not being met, supposedly because of financial constraints, and those needs are not being met by for disabled customers, and that money is being shoveled over onto the non-cap side of the Metro budget, I personally think that is awful. I think it is bordering on criminal, because there's no way that I can sit by and look at disabled people on limited income paying 2% of their budget to take a one-way trip on Metro Access, ADA regular paratransit, not the alternative, and you can't find funds to subsidize that or to remove that payment, but you can find money to transfer to Metro, who is not the original designee of those funds. I have written to Mr. Blake about it, so this is no surprise to him. He has very clear details on that, and I am not getting direct answers to direct questions. And Mr. Blake has given me some answers, but they're not clear. I need to talk to somebody in the budget office or whoever else has jurisdiction over this so that this can be clarified and documented, not just for me, but for everyone. Thanks. Everyone to know. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So the first one I will say to Mr. Torres, as he knows, after I got back in town, I did spend a part of my weekend looking at the bylaws that were online to respond to one of his questions. And on this one, I can agree with him. The formatting of the current bylaws online, not the greatest in the world. So we will be updating that document, not changing any language, obviously, but we're gonna just take down that particular format and upload a more modern PDF format of the bylaws. So we agree on that. Just give me a little bit of time to get to that. But that was a good point, and we agree on that one. In terms of the budget, again, I'm not trying to debate Mr. Torres on this, just speaking in general. Number one, as we say all along, Metro Access, for me, okay, I do not treat paratransit service, and I do not treat people with disabilities as some separate but equal group we're going to put off to the side. The Metro Access budget is not its own budget. To say that the money was designated for this or that, no, the money, the budget is an estimated annualized listing of our expected expenses. And our local jurisdictions kindly fund our forecasted expenses, not always to every dollar we want, obviously, but they fund it to what I consider to be over the last several years. And I've been telling you all this, that these board members have funded Metro Access to the levels that we need to ensure you have a paratransit safety net and allows us the flexibility to introduce alternatives. Any savings we generate is not our money, and it certainly wouldn't necessarily go to quote unquote fare reduction, because the fares are not part of our annualized forecasted expenses. If I save a dollar and that dollar is used on Metro Bus or Metro Rail, if a person can't grasp that, investments Metro, and this is where we go back to some of those arguments about New York and how wonderful New York is. When you can't get up New York, if you're blind, if you're in a wheelchair, you can barely use that system. This system, which wasn't my creation, we inherited, you know, the responsibility in terms of the oversight. is the most accessible in the nation. If one doesn't recognize that Metro's investment and expenses in bus and rail are just as much about people with disabilities as they are with about people without disabilities, then we'll never just, no matter how many answers I give you or anybody else gives you, you'll always, or someone may always consider the only time we're giving money to people with disabilities if you put them off on this other separate service. I don't buy that. And that's never been my motto. That's never been the way I operate. And it's not gonna be the way I operate here. In fact, when we offered fare reduction, did I necessarily do it directly on paratransit? No, the free fares went to Ubers and taxis, things that everybody else is doing. I'm not trying to put people with disabilities in a corner in a box. I'm trying to mainstream people with disabilities into the services that everybody else is using. So yes, we're going to continue to strive to generate savings. If we generate savings and some of those savings go into other areas of the agency that are also serving people with disabilities, I think that's a good thing. And as long as I'm here, you know, I've been saying this since the beginning, you know, y'all hear me all the time. When I first got appointed to this particular role, I said, I don't know if I'm gonna be here a week, a month. I think we were talking about 6 month rotations or something. We're gonna do it in a way that I believe is in the best interest of the greatest good and greatest number of people, including people with disabilities. And that doesn't mean segregation, that means integration of all the services. And so we're gonna generate savings. I would say to Mr. Torres or anyone who is concerned that Metro Access or the Department of Access Services asks for one level of budget, spends a little less than that, but still provides everybody who wants a trip, their trip, provides over 250,000 free trips, as well as there's free bus and rail. At some point, the concerns, you just have to go to your local elected official and say, what are they doing with our taxpayer money? Because I don't know if you're going to get an answer from somebody inside WMATA that's satisfied. So I would recommend you reach out to your local elected officials with the concerns and see where that goes. But no, our effort at generating savings, at mainstreaming all people onto the services that the ADA says they should be on, that's the way we're going to do it as long as I'm here. Now, when they move me out of the way, we can go, y'all could go a different direction. But as long as I'm here, that's the direction we're going to go. Saving money on our side and mainstreaming people with disabilities into all accessible services possible.
All right, Pat Sheehan, you're next.
Well, hold on. I'd like to make one point before.
We have 13 minutes and I still need to get other people.
This will be very quick. Okay.
Can I see if I can put you at the end. I do want to get to everybody.
Okay, fine.
Thank you. Pat.
I'll make mine quick. To the last comment, whatever. I think Mr. Blake, it would be interesting to know. I don't imagine that you probably have jurisdiction to make decisions based on budget as to if you save money, then you get to spend it here, there, and other. I think that those money decisions are probably made at a level that's probably higher than you, so that WMATA as an organization would have budget policy which would say, if Metro Access saves money, it'll go back into this pot. The same would probably happen with bus, rail, any other operation that WMATA has. And so as a point of fairness and equity, I don't know how much you get a chance to manage any kind of savings like that within your own budget. I don't know. But my question, and you know, that can be answered later. My question actually had to do with Regency Taxi. I've had a little bit of problems with Regency Taxi swapping over to that from, let's say, Metro Access. Last couple of times I've had an issue with them. They haven't shown up or whatever. But I will say also, when I've had to switch over to Uber from Regency Taxi, that has come through just like nothing. Man, that is just fast. So although Regency, I think, needs some work, I think your backup with Uber has been a real success, at least in my case. So thanks for that.
Yes, sir. And I'll say what I'm constantly trying to do with the taxi companies is, adjust the number of trips that the computer is allowed to select for them. I listen to all feedback, and when I hear that a company is challenged, I try to dial back how many trips the computer can assign to them in order to find that right mix for them. And back up with Uber as well as paratransit as well. That's why it's there.
The balance, right. Got it.
Inconvenience. And as far as the budget, yes, there are budget policies that are clearly at the top of the authority. And that's why I said at some point, just go to your local elected officials, because local funding is what, and that's what's so unique about WMATA compared to some other places I've been. The funding is so local, you can really literally talk to those who are making those decisions and see if they agree with you or not. And so, yeah, my job is to make sure that people with disabilities have their civil right to public transportation. And we're going to do that. And that doesn't always mean being segregated off to paratransit. That means fixed route, alternatives, and paratransit as a safety net. And if we can save some money doing that, and that money is reinvested into mainstreaming our system. I mean, Carol Lopez, I just saw an email a few minutes ago. Her and her team are out there today looking at a station, looking and always ensuring that these rail stations are flush with the rail cars so that people can use the same service that everybody else is using. That takes investment. And if our savings can help make public rail, which is free, by the way, to people with disabilities who are Metro Access eligible, then that's a good thing. Others may disagree, and I respect that. But as long as I'm here, that's the direction we're going to be going.
All right. Thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. Seeing it's 5:51 now, there's no other order of business. Can I make a motion to adjourn?
What? Hold on. Hello.
Second.
Paul?
Yes?
Weren't we going to have Mr. Torres? He asked for the floor one more time.
He has his hand.
No, he has exceeded his time by very, very, very much.
All right. If there's no other burning issue from any committee members, Anu, did you have your usual announcement?
Hold on. Yeah. I was promised time by the chair. People who are not chair or former chair should not be conducting themselves in this manner. This is between me and the chair, and a promise that was made directly to me by the chair. A lot of things were said about the point that I raised, and I'd like a point of clarification. The issue regarding the budget has to do with money that is funneled for Metro Access, and that money is unlimited. It is uncapped. It's not capped like the rest of WMATA. So that makes it clear that it is a special, separate fund. Now, if WMATA says we are taking the money that we saved on Uber and these alternatives, and we're putting it into this accessibility project on the other side, I don't think anybody would object. I am simply asking for an accounting, a transparent accounting of how whatever surplus money is being spent. And that is not an unreasonable request. I'm not expecting Mr. Blake to do it. I'm expecting the budget people to do it, because they know exactly what is going on with that. It's an answer that is available. And basically what I'm hearing Mr. Blake saying is that he wants me to go to my representative to get WMATA to give me that answer. I'm not.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody. A motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Darlene. All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
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 Nays, abstentions. Aye. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good and happy Thanksgiving. And we will see you in December.
All right.
Did you make your announcements?
Thank you.
The meeting adjourned, so.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Can we hold on just a minute?